Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, the senior living podcast. You got Josh and Lucas here. We're at Interface Southeast in Atlanta, the senior housing conference here. As we've said before, great attendance, a lot of energy, and we're really excited to have JP LaMonaco here on our show. Welcome, JP.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, JP, you are a moderator today. I was hoping that you would be the moderator for the panel that Josh was on so that you could kind of rib him a little bit.
And
really dig in. We could have given you some dirt on him to make him blush up there, but that didn't happen. So, with that being said, give us some of your background and what you've been in the industry a while, and you've got a lot of history and context. What led you down this path to develop your entire career and your company in senior living?
Well, you know, I'd like to tell you it was a really smart strategic decision when I was young, but really it wasn't. I entered the appraisal industry in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, and right then we were going through a recession. So when I entered, it was great. There was a lot of work to be done. And as we were coming out of the recession, the economy slowed down and there really wasn't much lending work. So at that point, I met somebody else who's worked at a firm that specialized in valuing hospitals.
Okay.
And they said, "Come on, why don't you come on board?" And I did in January of 96. And then I've just been dedicated to the industry ever since then.
Incredible. So your company is called the Valuation and Information Group, and you are based out of California, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. And so we had some discovery phone calls with you, and you and I actually met at Interface in Chicago, where I sat down at a table discussion, and you had tons of data on all of the big REITs, all of the big operators in the business, and then we were able to have a phone call with Josh and our team here. And Josh, what, I mean, about that level of document and detail, what stood out to you of interest here?
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of things. JP and I had an opportunity not only in some phone calls, but, you know, I'm a fan of JP's work and what he does on a daily basis, because I have to order those studies, it feels like, on a daily basis. And, you know, one of the things that I was wanting to talk today about, JP, is you have a very unique insight to how the industry's changing by the numbers, market conditions, what you're seeing changing, whether that's geographically and things like that. But I want to selfishly talk a little bit today about what we were talking about, that in this new age of looking for creative ways and innovative ways to develop new product for the market, how that's going to impact the approach to your traditional market study and analytics, how your firm may be positioning itself and the thought process as you approach a product like that. So maybe you could start, because I know that's a lot to talk about, maybe you could start and just kind of frame the conversation with your experience in the industry, how your approach to market feasibility and study has changed. Because even in my short 13-year career, it seems like that's changed a lot. And averages and weighted averages and scales have started shifting and things like that. So tell us a little bit about your background and how that's changed.
Sure. You know, and I think you bring up a great point. And there's a subtlety in the question that you bring up that I think gets overlooked a lot in this industry. So I'll touch on that. But, you know, just kind of rolling back to my start in this industry, it was really in the mid to late 90s where I really started to do a lot of assisted living. And there was a time period of probably about 2 years where we would get a new assignment every week or 2 weeks, and it would be five new proposed assisted living facilities. So we'd either I'd run out on the road or somebody would run out the road, and it was kind of the go-go west, wild west of the time. There was a ton of new assisted living companies. A lot of them were going public at the time, and Wall Street at that time viewed assisted living as a growth industry. So the multiples were really high, nothing compared to traditional real estate. But what was interesting there is it was such a young industry at that time that there wasn't established saturation rates. The economy was good. Facilities were filling up. And probably what ended up happening, well, what ended up bringing a kind of an end to that boom was more of the skilled nursing side. They went through some changes on reimbursement. And at the time, the investment industry really didn't understand the difference between assisted living and skilled nursing. Mm-hmm. Fast forward after we get through that little hiccup, the assisted living industry is a little bit more developed, a little bit more established. There's development occurring, but much more gradually, much more slowly. So this is the first time where we're starting to see saturation rates drawn from the market. Mm-hmm. And what we like to do is we like to go into markets that are stable and figure out what is the saturation rate there. But there's what there's the misconception is that one saturation rate fits all. Mm-hmm. And that really isn't the case. Saturation rates are affected by the economic cycle we're in. You know, for instance, right now, we're in a really robust economic cycle. Housing values are way up over the last 8 years. The stock market is way up. So seniors feel wealthy. Overall, the economy is doing well. They're much more willing to make a move, whether it's a lifestyle move or a care need move, to go into senior housing. Whereas during the Great Recession, for about 3 to 4 years, seniors were not going to move out unless it was completely need-driven. They were a hunker-down mentality. They were going to have difficulty selling their homes. So, you know, the saturation rates during that recession period are going to be very different than what we're experiencing now. So we're seeing right now some of the highest saturation rates that we've seen in history. And another contributing factor is seniors are better educated about what senior housing has to offer. Adult children are better educated. So as people get more familiar with it, people are more likely to adopt senior housing into their life at some point.
So that's fascinating. So now that's kind of gets us up to the current. We are really liking to think of what does the market look like over the next 5, 10, 15 years as kind of a new generation of boomers start thinking about housing options, care options, and things like that. Where do you think, I mean, we've talked a little bit about multi-generational concepts and all the innovative things that people are thinking how senior housing is greatly going to change. How does that even change your approach from a more traditional senior housing model? And when you're looking at markets, how do you approach that market study and that market work in the future?
Sure. And, you know, it's a great question, and it's a difficult question to answer because we can't go to the market and draw out existing saturation rates for those mm-hmm. types of projects. So what we do is we start with a basic saturation rate for senior housing, and then we apply some variables or some factors. You know, in a situation like that, we'll probably end up giving a ranged conclusion rather than a pinpoint conclusion. Mm-hmm. Because so much of that also is dependent on the ability of the sponsor, the management team, to articulate to the market what the benefits are to this new type of senior housing. Mm-hmm. You know, we may do a market study and it shows demand, but that doesn't mean that every operator is going to be able to succeed in that market.
Sure. Well, that's fascinating. So what, you know, I'm taking from that is a very close collaborative partnership, because it seems like the group like yours and the potential developer or operator, whoever's ordering that feasibility study, there's going to have to be quite a narrative and an understanding of what you're trying to achieve, which is not as cookie cutter as, you know, what we're dealing with oftentimes today. So, you know, I could talk about this a long time because I'm passionate about this. I look at these studies all the time. But today was a pretty awesome panel. You had a really good group of people. Give us some of the key takeaways that were from your panel that you were moderating as you see them, that were really important topics that if the industry as a whole is not talking about, they should be talking about.
Right. Yeah, it was a great panel, and it was great to moderate it because it was great to hear their insights. A couple trends that really struck me as key trends going forward. One is the three operators that were on the panel all agreed that assisted living, the target population for assisted living today has changed over the last 10 to 20 years. The feedback I'm getting from them is that the independent living resident of today was the assisted living resident of 20 years ago. And what that means is that seniors are getting older and they're getting more frail. Assisted living has really become what assisted living today is really taking care of the nursing home patient from 20 years ago for mm-hmm. those people that can afford it. And what we've seen in the independent living is that it's not really so much a lifestyle choice anymore, mm-hmm. but it's almost a choice that these seniors need some supervision, some oversight. So what's interesting about this panel is several of them are actually turning back the clock and really getting into that active adult communities now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I asked them what the definition of active adult is, and they said technically it's 55 plus, but really their target market is more the 65 to 75 plus. Mm-hmm. That senior that is really looking to make a lifestyle choice, doesn't want to take care of the home anymore, doesn't want to worry about the gardener or the maid or the bills, really just wants to enjoy life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm seeing that too, and I think one of our previous guests in one of the keynotes here, Charles Turner, kind of was touching on that our industry as we have defined it, as we have worked in the senior living, senior care, predominantly driven by assisted living and now memory care, we are such a higher acuity. And I think as Charles put it, you know, we can either try to ignore that or we can embrace that. And you're seeing kind of a clear division of operators and developers that are either making an approach to where, hey, we're gonna go downstream and try to stay with that higher functioning resident, and what we were doing as assisted living, we're now going to do independent living or villa products or age restricted housing of some form. Or you've got the other group that's like, hey, let's embrace this. We're just caring. We've got to adapt. We've got to adopt. Now we're hospitality meets healthcare, and we're going to interface with the healthcare system and become part of that referral network. So it's interesting that was one of the big discussion points here today. So anything else that you thought was thought-provoking from that panel?
Yeah. Well, and just to follow up on your point, there's room for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a low acuity, high acuity is the right answer. If it's done right, there's seniors that are going to want that.
So thanks for making that point, because you're exactly right. There is no right or wrong answer. All of the people need care. All of the people need housing. And so that's one of the, honestly, I think that's one of the biggest opportunities, you know, because we've talked a lot about challenges, you know, and things and obstacles. But with every one of those challenges, there's some unique opportunity. And I think it's a really exciting space to be in spite of all of our challenges and our problems that we need to solve and things like that. There's more opportunity to whatever model you have to find a niche and to serve a growing aging population. So it's pretty exciting. Lucas, yeah. you have a different approach on this. You know, you come from renovation, repositioning communities and things like that. So what's your takeaways?
Well, I would just say to you guys' point is that we're seeing that in just the services that we provide. So doing a complicated construction project in an open operating building, those different levels of acuity, we are monitoring that as well. And our approach to that has certainly changed over the years, meaning that we may be working in an independent living community. There could be a resident there that's one day away from going into memory care.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with assisted. And so we have to, our staff included, really be aware of that. You know, it's a little bit of a different approach. When you're a construction service company, you think that your expertise, which we've learned, you know, by making mistakes over the years, we learn from that and think, well, okay, we, you know, as we learn the business, is that, yes, we need to be great at construction and reconstruction and all of those things, but we need to understand the buildings that we're working in and the challenges that they face with the people that live there. So, yeah, I think that that's a continuing topic that you know, an issue in the space that just that level of acuity and how that plays out in an operations model and a lifestyle model. It's a good, I mean, the panel, panels from today, that was a big topic.
Yeah. So, JP, your work, your valuation, your feasibility, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, from my understanding, your work is approved by almost, if not all, major lenders, HUD, and so forth like that.
Oh, yeah. We have a wide variety of clients that use our work.
So for the new developer, the new operator, we've got a very diverse audience, and they're looking to size up the market, and they're looking for innovative ideas. Maybe this is a new product type. Maybe this is something that's not your traditional cookie cutter, something that just easily gets funded because it's known, there's known saturation rates. What are some of the things that developers and operators should be doing to partner with folks like you, the questions they should be asking, the problems they should be trying to solve, and the narrative that they're trying to create to present their market and their work and their validation and their case for this new product? What advice could you give them because you deal with these lenders and know what they're looking for?
Sure. And whenever you're breaking new ground, it's always difficult. Within the space of the senior housing industry, we've had people that have been very innovative, and innovative to a point where it's caused the project to fail. Mm-hmm. Maybe they had a great idea, but their execution wasn't good. Mm-hmm. So we've seen specialty facilities, some of them succeed and some of them not. So obviously, if it's going to be a unique, specialized facility, it's going to get a little bit more scrutiny. Mm-hmm. The projects that we currently see that are unique, that are not kind of down the middle of the path, most of those that are high success are folks that have been in the industry, understand the basics of how the industry works, understand the basics of how to market a facility, how to operate a facility, and then it's a little bit of a twist, either in the target market that they're going after, or it's a unique location where they're partnering with a university and really making it a multi-generational type of facility. Those types of projects, usually we're going to take a little bit more capital. A lender is going to want to see more skin in the game. Mm-hmm. So it really helps to have that big backing behind you.
And a big piece of the ingredient that I think what I heard you say is there's an experience component with getting a team surrounding that developer or, you know, that operator that is experienced and has built relationships and successful projects that people can believe in. So that goes a long way.
You know, one of the themes that always comes up at these conferences is, you know, real estate is location, location, location. Senior housing is management, management, management. Mm-hmm. And it really is the number one driver. When we do a market study, and it's maybe an owner of a piece of land, a developer, you know, the first question we ask is, do you have an operator? Are you working with an operator? Do you have a concept of what you want to build? And if they tell us, no, we don't, then we understand that this market study is going to really be used. The first step for this market study is to use it to attract an operator, to partner up with an operator. Because mm-hmm. there's no point in a developer spending money to get the entitlements, to get the drawing, the plans done, until they have an operator. Because ideally, you want the operator to help give input on the type of development, the layout of the project.
Well, I think that's a great point, and obviously, selfishly, I agree with that. But I'll tell you, I'm still shocked. I was just approached by two projects this week that multi-million-dollar projects that they already have a full design,
yep.
They already have the feasibility work done, already through the entitlement phase. You know, and they're ready to break ground, and they're just now starting to figure out who's going to operate this thing.
It's amazing.
And it's fascinating to me how, you know, they get that funded and how they're taking that risk just off of maybe a beautiful design that lays well on that site, you know. So I still see that, and I'm surprised those deals are still getting funded, but I do think that's a shrinking opportunity. So Lucas, summarize this for us.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of great information that you know, I'm on the couch here really just taking it all in. I'm learning as we go, which is the reason why I love these conferences. There's so much thought leadership And that term gets thrown around, but it's really taking place here. These panels are these are some of the top people in the industry. So that to have the opportunity to listen to JP moderate and to ask these important questions and have these important discussions, it's a privilege for us here at Bridge the Gap to be able to give this back to our bigger audience. And you know, as we continue to talk, is that you know Bridge the Gap is emerging as you know a strong voice for the industry. You know, we want to advocate, we want to educate, inform, and influence, as we talked about our whys before. And so I think this is a really good, this is a great portion of why, is to give that back. And so, JP, thank you so much. I know that you've got more meetings and you've got travels back to the West Coast. And we're going to stay connected with you, and we just really appreciate your time. Thanks, JP, so much.
It was my pleasure, and I look forward to listening to some more podcasts.
Absolutely. We're going to bring it. And thanks to our listeners who are out there. Please connect with us on our social sites. Ask us questions. We'll make sure that we connect to JP in the show notes if you have questions about valuation and these assessments. I'm sure that he'll be happy to talk with you. And thanks for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.